Coming up on KUCB News, the city of Unalaska has declared an emergency and is working to front charter flights for the community. And though information is still scant, investigators have provided an update on the inquiry into this month's plane crash. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. Unalaska has declared a local emergency over the community's lack of commercial air service. The City Council approved the 21-day declaration at a special meeting last night, almost 2 weeks after Raven Air Group suspended the island's regular flights to and from Anchorage in the wake of a fatal plane crash. According to Mayor Vince Tudiakoff Sr., the emergency order is a sort of message to Raven, which is only offering charter flights until it can certify a new aircraft for the route and restart commercial service.
We're saying it's not enough.
With the declaration, the city is planning to take on the complicated and expensive chartering process so that individual Unalaskans don't have to. The order allows the city to charter up to 3 flights per week and then resell seats to the many community members looking to travel for work, vacation, medical appointments, and more. The city's goal is to get those flights up and running next week, as long as it can secure an emergency waiver from the U.S. Department of Transportation. Tudiakoff says officials will be working on that for the remainder of this week, as well as checking charter pricing from Raven and other carriers.
We heard a number of 27,000 a few days ago. It depends on the size of the plane, a lot of different things. So that's hopefully what we'll find out on Friday.
That timeline would have community charters starting just as Raven plans to resume regular service about 3 weeks after the accident. But Councillor Sherry Coleman says the city needs to move forward as if the airline won't be ready.
I'm not real confident in their dateline. So again, even though this may seem like it's taken forever, we have to keep putting one foot in front of the other. You know, if it's short term, fabulous. But if it ends up being longer, at least we have a plan.
The council's special meeting marked the city's first major public rebuke of how air travel's been handled in the aftermath of the crash. In addition to criticizing Raven, which owns Pan Air, Coleman and the other councilors say that Alaska Airlines should be doing more as the marketing partner that sells Unalaska's flights.
I was a little miffed by the way Alaska Airlines has basically abandoned all of us here. As a community, having to figure out how to, again, fend for ourselves.
While Alaska officials have acknowledged the inconvenience of the suspension and refunded all tickets through November 8th, they say they can't help Unalaskans to find flights in the interim or offset the price of charters, many of which are coming in well above the average commercial ticket. Beyond enabling the city's short-term plan to front charters, Mayor Tudiakoff says that declaring an emergency will help councillors seek state and federal help for longer-term projects to improve airport safety and reliability. That may include lengthening the island's runway so it can host larger planes and attract different airlines.
We're hoping that through this emergency declaration, it would also rattle the cages in Washington, D.C. and start looking at this community as for what it is. We're the largest fishing community, and here we're sitting being fed little planes when we have 10 to 20,000 people coming in about a month and a half.
With the busy winter fishing season set to ramp up in late December, it's unclear what air service will look like at that time or how well airlines will be able to handle the influx of seasonal fishermen and processors. Tudiakoff says the city council will continue calling special meetings as the situation unfolds, including one this Friday night at 6 o'clock. Meanwhile, the National Transportation Safety Board is continuing its investigation into the cause of the crash, which killed one passenger and injured more than a dozen others. The inquiry is slated to take a year or more, though the federal agency is planning to release a preliminary report within a few weeks. KUCB spoke with Clint Johnson to learn more. He is chief of the NTSB's Alaska office.
So typically, a couple of weeks from the time that the team gets back to Washington, D.C., they'll produce a preliminary report. It, just as the name implies, it's very preliminary. So it's going to give just the basic information as far as the conditions, might give a little bit of insight as far as the sequence of events, but there's not going to be a tremendous amount of information there, to be honest with you.
And so the team of 21 NTSB investigators who were on the island, they have all left. Is that correct?
That is correct. They went back to D.C. and their various locations here over the weekend, late in the weekend, Sunday, I think the last folks left. But that doesn't mean that they won't be back. If the need arises, they can definitely come back. And we obviously still have our one investigator that was there from the Alaska Regional Office, Noreen Price, and she'll kind of be the quarterback, if you will, as far as any other activities from the team up here.
And knowing that the full investigation process will take about a year, can you tell me anything about, you know, how NTSB manages its caseload? Because at a recent city meeting, we learned that one investigator, John Lavelle, is also working on this very high-profile crash with Ethiopian Airlines that, you know, killed more than 150 people. And then there were a number of deadly accidents in Southeast Alaska this summer. And so I'm wondering, you know, how does all of that get juggled?
Yeah, I can share from the Alaska Regional standpoint. I can't really comment on John's per se, but I mean, for the most part, each one of the investigators here in the Alaska Regional Office are handling, you know, between 4 and 5 and 6 fatal accidents a year. That's not including what we refer to as limited accidents, which are non-injury, but they're still required to be investigated. So, you know, our caseload is pretty high. Unfortunately, we've had a busy season this year, so it does take us a little bit of time to work through those accidents and make sure that we deliver a very comprehensive, detailed investigation. So, yeah, it's juggling that caseload can be a bit of a challenge sometimes.
And so while you and the rest of the investigators do that work, Unalaska is in this sort of strange in-between period, you know, where the community is really eager to start regular flights again because they need to travel, but we also don't really know what happened and where everything stands safety-wise. You know, Raven Air Group says they've suspended the flights in the interest of safety, but then we have the NTSB saying that it hasn't immediately identified any issues that would prohibit, say, flying. So can you share any insight on that, on this period where we don't really know where things stand, but we're still trying to fly?
Yeah, and that's a tough question. It really is, because obviously what we need to do is be able to understand the sequence of events that that led to this tragic accident here. Until that's done, we'd just be speculating, and we don't speculate, to be honest with you. I mean, we always say that we rely on factual information, and we don't have all the facts at this point right now, unfortunately. We're working on it, and you know, there were some components that were harvested from the airplane. We're going to be testing those components, but at this point right now, we just can't draw any conclusions, and that's not a line. I mean, that truly is the case at this point right now. We need to understand and have a full understanding of the sequence of events that took place before this accident and during the accident.
And thank you for the information that you can share, Clint. Is there anything else that you can tell me right now?
No. Like I say, we're very much in the preliminary stages of the investigation here. I know the team is working very diligently on it. It's one that is important to Alaska, and obviously being the chief of Alaska here, it's near and dear to my heart. So we'll continue our investigation here and hopefully have some additional information fairly soon here.
That was Clint Johnson of the National Transportation Safety Board speaking about the ongoing investigation into this month's fatal plane crash. This is, of course, a developing story, and KUCB will continue reporting as more information becomes available. The U.S. Coast Guard is considering phasing out NAVTEX, a global system that broadcasts weather and safety information to boats both large and small. But as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, mariners are urging the Coast Guard to keep the free low-tech service in place rather than switch to subscription-based satellites.
For decades, the Coast Guard's NAVTEX towers have broadcast from Cape Cod to Kodiak Island. It's pretty low-tech. Receivers spit out basic telex-type messages on paper or on a screen.
The most common thing that you would see is a weather message, but you will also get public safety information messages.
That's Derek Kroenix. He's the Coast Guard's Chief of Spectrum Management and Telecommunications in Washington, D.C.
We need to replace it because the infrastructure is old and it's failing.
But he says before the federal government commits to an expensive upgrade, it wants to gauge how vital the service really is. The International Maritime Organization is working on upgrading the text-only NAVTEX system to something that will include images and graphics. When that system's ready, larger vessels will be required to upgrade to it. But not if the Coast Guard phases out these radio-based systems completely.
So our view is it may be better and more reliable for people to actually switch to satellite if they're going to have to buy new equipment.
In September, the Coast Guard made its case in a notice in the Federal Register. More than 50 people have commented so far, almost all overwhelmingly in favor of keeping NAVTEX.
It's pretty deeply embedded across the fleet. We find it on board everything from ocean-going tugs to commercial fishing fleet.
Pete DeVaris was a Kodiak-based commercial fisherman for years.
It's relatively cheap. We can buy used NAVTEX receivers on eBay for $100. And IMO satellite services is a subscription service. So you're talking about retrofitting, you know, an entire fleet with new technology, some that might not be available to the smaller vessels.
Piggybacking on commercial satellites would be much cheaper for the federal government. Kroenix says feedback will help the Coast Guard justify investment in radio transmitters.
We haven't made a decision yet. We're trying to get public opinion on this because we want to know, is the switch to satellite make more sense for people?
The Coast Guard is accepting comments online through November 12th. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
And back in Unalaska, a few reminders. The deadline for the community center's pumpkin carving contest is tonight at 9 o'clock. Carvers are asked to drop off their creations by that time so that they can be judged during tomorrow's Halloween party. And parent-teacher conferences are underway today and tomorrow for students at the Unalaska City School and Eaglesview Elementary, Atchigalik. Families of 7th graders and older are invited to drop in anytime during conference hours. Meanwhile, those for 6th graders and younger are asked to follow their scheduled appointments. To confirm a scheduled conference for younger students, Unalaskans should contact their child's homeroom teacher. And to learn about the drop-in times for older students, check out our online community calendar at kucb.org. And that is the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online again at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.